so we should be engaging them. We want to hear from you about your annual report. And one of the new things that probably we've not been doing quite well is 2 years old. There's something that is called it's budget review and recommendations report. So the brief, it's actually a way of looking at your what has happened, and then seeing if we see there are areas where we think that some of the money should go to, we can make those suggestions as Parliament, but without changing policy. So we are seeing you listening to your reports, but having that in mind, that if we think that there are important areas that need to be relooked at financially, it's something that we are going to do. So you must have that at the back of your mind, that we are even looking at that level. So we will just entertain your report. We've just been seeing Auditor General and FFC. It's so interesting that they've given us a good report about you, which we expected it to be good. But there's always this thorny issue about you and the department. That's why we wanted to wait for the department. Mm. Is that the money that you get from the department, we're always worried that they are not giving you enough. Maybe they think that you don't have capacity to use it. But the worry is not that you might have capacity or you might not have capacity. But the worry is that if you give me 10 rands and somebody give me 2 cents, I'll report more to the one who gave me 10 rands, because that person is giving me more money, because you have got your own fundraising. And if you get more money from the fundraisers, you'll be more accountable to them, because they give you their money. And we think that if we want to transform the health services in South Africa, we should have research work that informs us as to where do we need to go. How do we shape our policies so that they fit South Africa? They don't fit somewhere else. They fit South Africa. And it means that we should be thinking about how do we give you more money so that we could handle the situation. But be that may, let's listen to your report, and then we'll make the recommendation. One thing that we forgot to do is, because of, we're going for elections, maybe most of us are not going to be here next year, but we forgot to congratulate you formally. But let's do it formally here. Congratulations for getting a presidential award, for the good work that you're doing. And in fact, for somebody to get an award from the president, it shows that you are not an individualistic person. You are doing something for the country. You are doing something for us. So congratulations. Let's take this opportunity to congratulate you. I think you might have seen, or you might have heard, that Professor, I call him Slim, but he's Professor Karim. He's the one. I want him to stand up so that you can see the person who got an award for doing good work for South Africans, for everybody, not for a particular person, a particular political party, but for South Africans. He's here. Maybe you can stand up, Slim, so that we can see you. I know you are tall, but we want you to stand up so that everybody can see you, the man who got an award.
Before I do that, I have embarrassing news in that I didn't get the award. My wife got the award. So I'm happy to stand and take congratulations on her behalf. But as you know, my wife and I do a lot of our research together. But the president awarded her the Order of Mapungubwe. Not me.
You are together. You are one. Congratulations
on behalf of her.
Thank you. The second thing is that you might, I think it goes to you. We've just heard that there's a conference, malaria conference in Durban, and we've just heard that they seem to be coming up with a vaccine for malaria. Malaria is not one of those things that are really hitting us so hard in South Africa, but certain areas are being hit hard. But the fact that there's a vaccine, it gives us hope that there's something moving, and in fact, it tells us that sometime in future, even the HIV and AIDS vaccine will be coming up. So there's a lot of work that is being done by scientists. So it makes us happy as a portfolio committee that there's this good work that is being done. So those were just the comments before we give over to you. Maybe irrespective of the fact that you might think that you know everybody here, let's reintroduce ourselves so that we know who is here. Can we introduce ourselves before we allow the chairperson of the board to take over? Madube, you can start.
Good afternoon, everybody. My name is Molebogeng Raisdube, member of this committee.
Good afternoon. Lebitso la ka ke Patricia Kopane. I'm a member of this portfolio committee. Thank you.
Afternoon. I'm Papi Khanare. I'm a member of the committee.
Good morning. good afternoon. My name is Morosi Sekgaledi, so I don't mind his old age.
Good afternoon. Beatrice Ngobo, member.
Good afternoon. I'm Hilda Msweli, the member of this committee. Thank you.
Good afternoon. I'm Thandiwe Kenyesh, member of this committee from Eastern Cape. Thank you.
And we've even got e-department, which they have just arrived now, so nobody in there. So they are here.
President and the Chair.
Thank you very much, Dr. Kwane, and wonderful good afternoon to all the members of the Portfolio Committee. I'd like to start by briefly introducing the members of the delegation. I am accompanied by the Chair of the MRC Board, Professor Lizo Mazwai. I think he needs no introduction, particularly since he comes from the Eastern Cape. But he has, for many years, been the Dean of the Medical School at the University of Transkei, a noted surgeon, and has also served in the highest echelons of our profession as the President of the College of Medicine of South Africa. So he certainly brings to our board the wisdom of science and our profession. On his right is Ms. Khalipa. She's working with us in terms of looking at performance within the MRC, and she's the person that is continually driving our organization to do better and to set higher standards. And then on my left is Mr. Nick Buick, who is the MRC's CFO. I have to say we were fortunate to steal him away from the post office. And he comes to us having run huge budgets and has brought to us a lot of that experience and has enabled us to perform much better, and so you'll hear about our clean audit. And then next to him is one of our newest recruits. Mr. Mbulelo Bikwani was recruited just about 6-7 months ago to be the head of our human resources department. is a lawyer by training and has for many years served as a commissioner in the CCMA, and so is very familiar with labor legislation and has brought to our HR department quite a deep sense of humanity, and he deals with people in a way that I have long wished for in the way in which we deal with our staff. So he has brought certainly to our organization a breath of fresh air. And sitting behind me is Sarah Bock, who is the head of the new office that has been created to monitor performance and to do strategic planning in our organization. So she is driving. She's always done this, but we've sort of created a small group around her to carefully monitor, because we're putting much more emphasis on monitoring our performance as an organization, but not just the MRC, but for the whole country. I'd like to also use this opportunity to welcome Noboyeni and to say to her, it's a great pleasure to have you with us. And Noboyeni has always been a very strong supporter of medical research, so it's great to have her here. I am not going to deal with our annual report in detail. I will assume you've had a chance to look at it. Rather, I want to use this opportunity to highlight a few issues. And so, I can go to the next slide. So, just trying to get to the next slide. There you are. It takes a bit of time to respond. So the actual annual report follows the new format that was sent to us by Treasury. So you'll see it looks somewhat pedantic compared to our previous reports, which were much more boastful. This one has a lot more data and tables and so on that were prescribed in terms of the format that we follow. What I want to do in the next 15 to 20 minutes is I want to just remind you of our vision and mission. I want to give you an update on where we are as an organization in revitalizing the MRC. I want to talk about our performance, and that's mainly what I want to cover. Briefly touch on governance. Mr. Buick will talk very briefly on the finances before I make some concluding remarks. We have not asked the chair of the board to make any specific presentations, but I will ask him to comment briefly at the end of my presentation to highlight any issues he wishes to bring to the attention of the portfolio committee. So it's indeed our pleasure to be with you here today and to just remind you that our vision is one of building a healthy nation, and that's how we take our view. But there are many ways to build a healthy nation. We have seen it as our role to do so through research and through innovation. So that's how we see our role and how we want to make our contribution to our country. Our mission is to improve the nation's health and the quality of life by conducting and funding relevant and responsive health research. So the idea is that our research should be relevant, you know, it should address our country's priorities. It should be responsive. It should understand what the challenges are and respond directly to those challenges. And this concept of relevant and responsive is one that we have put as the, can you go back? The underlying theme that has driven a lot of the revitalization. And we want to do so through the research, the development, which is about the building of capacity, innovation, and research translation, that is taking our findings and taking them the next step into implementation. It is not our task to implement services, to manage, to make sure that new treatments are implemented. Our task to find those new treatments and to assist those who are doing the implementation to maximize the information and the evidence that they have available to them. So it's in the pursuit of that mission and vision that we've revitalized the MRC. And that process of revitalization is now almost complete. It will be completed by the end of this year, there are just very few little issues that we have remaining. So what are the central things that we have done to revitalize the MRC? The first is that we have had to make sure that research is better funded in this country. So at the last time I appeared before this portfolio committee, I explained that if you look at all of the medical research funding that is made available to South African scientists, the largest single contributor to funding medical research in South Africa is the US government. The US government, by our estimation, provides roughly in the order of 1.2 billion rands a year for specifically for the funding of medical research. Most of it comes from the US National Institutes of Health, some of it from the US Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, and some of it from USAID. But there is little question or doubt that medical research in South Africa would totally collapse if it was not for the US government's contribution. And we continue to lobby the US government to provide us with additional funding, including myself. I have been to Congress to brief Congress on the importance of their contribution to research in South Africa. By comparison, the South African government contributes about 300 to 350 million in each of the years of the current MTEF. So this year our budget is in the order of around 326 million rands. So we get somewhere between a quarter to a third of what the US government provides is provided by our government to South African medical scientists. So it is clearly a high priority for the MRC to find ways to increase funding. And there are a couple of reasons for that. The first, and probably the most important, is as science advances, newer technologies, newer techniques, newer assay machines, new laboratory equipment is much more expensive. And so that, in order for us to remain at the cutting edge of science, we have to ensure that we have the latest and the best equipment that is available. If we're not, we will always be second fiddle. We have been able to maintain our competitive advantage by ensuring we can secure funding for adequate equipment in certain fields like HIV, but not in other fields, for example, cancer. So the MRC went on an effort to try and increase our budget, and our goal was to double our budget over the next 3 years. So under the current MTEF, our current allocation is about a billion rands over the 3 years. Our goal was to secure another billion rands so that we would have 2 billion over the next MTEF. I'm very pleased to report to the Portfolio Committee we have made substantial headway on that score. We have now achieved roughly 700 million in additional funding. That money has come from Treasury through the Competitiveness Fund. It has come from the Gates Foundation, who have made a large sum of money available to us specifically for new technology development. It has come from philanthropy. It has come from the US government. So we have, through many of these mechanisms, secured additional funding for the MRC. Unfortunately, our allocation from the Department of Health has not been able to grow by virtue of the fact that the entire government has not had substantial increases in budget. But our goal is to achieve the target of an additional billion rand over the next MTF. So we are at this point short by about 100 million per year over the next 3 years, which I am continuing to raise. In fact, we just met with Anglo-American, and they've given us 14 million a year over the next 3 years. So we're getting there. I mean, it's sad when we have to have a situation where we start having cake sales in order to fund our medical research. Our goal is to try and get substantial sums of money from major philanthropic organizations. We have improved our compliance. We've received a clean audit from the Auditor General last year. And one of the big success stories in the revitalization is the creation of SHIP. SHIP is the acronym in that it stands for Strategic Health Innovation Partnerships. So what SHIP is about, it's about creating new drugs, new vaccines, new diagnostics, and new devices. So this is not about basic curiosity research, this is about product development. And we are developing many new products. If you take, for example, in the malaria field, we are, together with the University of Cape Town, we are involved in developing a completely new class of anti-malaria drugs, which was presented and big in the news from the Durban conference. For that project, $5 million was secured from the Gates Foundation. We matched it with $5 million of our own money. So we have a situation where we will invest $100 million into the development of this new malaria drug. So it just gives you a sense of the kinds of things we are doing in SHIP to create new drugs, new diagnostics. And as the chair has already pointed out, one of the big areas that we invest in, and this is jointly with the Department of Health, is in an HIV vaccine. And I hope I will have the opportunity to come and tell you some very good news shortly. We have very early data that suggests we may have quite an important breakthrough on the path towards the vaccine. Not the vaccine itself, but on the path towards the vaccine. So from the MRC's point of view, we see the country's role in developing new drugs, new treatments, and new diagnostics as really critical to helping our country improve health. We've revamped our extramural unit and grant review process. We've improved our administrative systems. We've reduced our policies, for example. If we had 93 policies, we've reduced it to 25. We've had KPMG come and review all our administrative departments. We've now restructured them so they're much more efficient. We have some savings in the way in which they've been restructured. We've commissioned Deloitte and just received their report on a space audit, how might we maximize the space that we have and use it much more effectively. We've improved communications. We now have a weekly bulletin that goes out called the Friday Bulletin that just keeps all the players informed about new things going on at the MRC. We have a monthly MRC Celebrate Science where we convey to the research community new findings. We announce all of our major scientific findings and publications. And then we have our annual report and we have our annual brochure that announces our biggest breakthroughs of the year. And then finally, we've completed the restructuring of the intramural program where we are now focusing on the top 10 causes of death from the burden of disease. And so we moved from what we used to have was 27 intramural units. We now are down to 11, and we have two others that we hope to create when funding becomes available. So I think overall we can say that the MRC is now a leaner, meaner, and a more productive organization. Next slide, please. So how does that translate in terms of the performance information? Next slide. So in the way in which we measure our performance, we measure it by a set of criteria we inherited. But I want to first talk about what have been our biggest achievements. So this paper, which comes from the journal Science, which is one of the most prestigious journals we have in the world, is a paper that looks at the prevalence of intimate partner violence against women. In this study, which was undertaken as a global study, Naima Abrams from our gender and health unit at the MRC is one of the key authors of this important study. Next slide. And if you look at this particular particular study, in parallel, there was a paper published in the same week as the Science paper. A paper was published in The Lancet. And The Lancet paper was looking at intimate partner homicide, which is one aspect of intimate partner violence. So this is about husbands killing wives and wives killing husbands. And again, a systematic review looking at the entire field of what's available in terms of evidence and data on intimate partner violence. These two studies reflect a very high level of impacting on global policy, because these two studies being published were accompanied at the same time by the release of the WHO report. And in this WHO report, which looks at this issue of partner violence, Rachel Jukes, who is the head of the MRC's Gender and Health Research Unit, is one of the co-authors. And at the same time, it produced a set of recommendations and global guidance, to which you will see that the MRC is one of the signatories. So if you look at the report on your right-hand side, you will see that we are one of the signatories, and the MRC's logo appears in this World Health Organization report. So we have set a global policy, global guidance on how to deal with some of the challenges that we face in terms of intimate partner violence. Next slide. We also have made very substantial contributions in this set of four papers that were published in The Lancet in 2012, one of them early this year in 2013. These four papers bring to bear the burden of various diseases that we have in South Africa. And of those, the paper that's right on top, which was first authored by Bongani Mayosi and included several of us from the MRC, including myself, is the follow-up to the Health in South Africa series run in The Lancet. So this paper, Health in South Africa, Changes and Challenges Since 2009, chronicles for the first time the systematic improvement that we've seen in the health of South Africans since 2009. We wrote the last series of six papers, which were all published in The Lancet in 2009. And we felt that that set of papers needed to be updated, and The Lancet therefore gave us this opportunity to update that data. And this paper provides for the first time a comprehensive set of information and real data which shows conclusively how much better we are doing. And I think we all are familiar with probably the biggest conclusion that we've made, which is that South Africans are now living on average 10% longer. If I can get the next slide. So it's not only in the general area of the burden of disease. In the area of TB and HIV, which are amongst our biggest problems in this country, we continue to make substantial impacts in terms of finding new ways of dealing with both TB and HIV. In these three papers, which were all published last year in 2012, we provided the evidence of a new drug, PA824, in conjunction with bedequiline, pyrazinamide, and moxifloxacillin, to look at its impact on drug-resistant tuberculosis. Again, making new inroads, new candidates for drugs, also looking at new issues in drug resistance, and finding new ways of providing antiretroviral therapy on the scale required in South Africa that is sustainable. And that's in the last of those three papers where we provided the data from the STRETCH trial. Next slide. So if we were being assessed in terms of our contribution to new knowledge and making major scientific contributions at global level that is impacting globally on the way in which we are looking at diseases, policies, guidelines, new drug development, there is no question that the MRC has performed well. We have been in the process of revising the inherited set of strategic goals and performance indicators into a new set which fit better the revitalized MRC. And we've summarized it as four key strategic goals. The first of which is to ensure that we administer health research effectively and efficiently. The second, which is our main order of business, is to lead in the generation of new knowledge. And this new knowledge needs to be translated into policies and practices to improve health. The third is to support new technologies, and the fourth is to build capacity, the training and the PhDs and the master's programs that we support. In order to support these four new strategic goals, we've proposed 10 new indicators. So we are moving away from our previous, where we had 22 indicators. We now have coned it down to these 10, which we think capture the essence of what we're trying to achieve. I won't go through them in detail except to say that we want to make sure we're doing a good job of the administration. So we want to get a clean audit. We want to make sure that we are spending as much of our money on research and as little of it on the administration. And so we've put down there that we want to know the percentage of our budget that we spend on administration rather than research. We also want to show that we are leading in the generation of new knowledge. So we want to know about how many articles we are publishing. ISI is the international norm so that we know that these articles are being published in reputable journals. So reputable journals get ISI accreditation because there are lots of journals out there, thousands, that don't have ISI accreditation. We do not recognize those journals as being suitable for our publications. We want to know about how many ISI articles acknowledge our support and how many are we publishing in the top journals. And the four top journals are the New England Journal of Medicine, the Lancet, Science, and Nature. We want to know about how many of them are first authored. We want to know about how many new policies and guidelines reference our research and how many research grants are we awarding to university-based researchers. In terms of innovation and technology, we want to know how many projects do we have to create new diagnostics and drugs and vaccines. And we want to know how many scholarships we are providing. So this set of 10 indicators suits and is much more aligned with the way in which we see the MRC moving forward in making its contribution to its mission of making a healthy nation, of contributing to a healthy nation. In terms of governance, next slide. Here, what we are focused on is to ensure we have good governance in the organization. As you will see, that the MRC has 14 board members, 13 of which are non-executive and myself. The Department of Health has a seat in an observer capacity on the board. And in the course of this year, I'm very sad to report to the board, to the portfolio committee, that one of our board members passed away. It was indeed a very sad occasion that Mr. Nangan Lovu met with an accident on his motorbike and died on the spot. One of our other members resigned, and so as part of the renewal of the appointment of the board, the current board term ends at the end of this month. From the 1st of November, we will have a new board appointed by the Department of Health. That those two members will be, those two vacancies will be addressed in the appointment of the new board. In terms of risk management, we've improved that dramatically. The Audit and Risk Committee reviews compliance with all laws and regulations, and we have detailed plans on mitigation of risks. And then lastly, our clean audit in 2012 ensures that, next slide, that we have done a good job in terms of managing this. And this is the award that we received from the Auditor General at their function that was held in Cape Town. Next slide. Financial information, I'm going to hand over to Mr. Buick.
Thank you and good afternoon. I'll just do a very brief summary of the financial position of the organization at the end of March 2013. All the detailed numbers are obviously in the annual report. Just basically, in summary, our revenue for the year decreased slightly by 6.5% to 504 million. That was mainly as a result of a reduction in our grant income. Our government income actually was steady, up slightly, but the big decline was in grant income. However, we managed to keep our operating expenses well under control, so our revenue declined, we managed to keep our expenses down, so they actually decreased by 0.73, and if inflation's running at 6, so that's a real decline of some 6-7%. So we kept our costs under control, resulted in an operating deficit of 663 million. That was up slightly on the 32 million which we reported in the year before. This deficit was offset to some extent by an increase in our investment income. Obviously, our surplus funds, before they get spent, get invested. We earned interest on this money, and we managed to generate 17 million rands worth of interest in the year, which obviously offset and reduced the deficit down to 45 million. And that's up again on the prior year's number of 16 million. We did, however, budget for a deficit of 42, so we were only 3 million over our budget, and that was mainly as a result of a provision for severance packages and consulting fees for assistance with the revitalization process. On the balance sheet side, our reserves remain strong at 241 million. Our total assets have increased by 2.4% to 535 million. The main reason for that is that our cash and investments, which generated the interest, have increased by 17% to 368 million, which was offset to some extent by the increase in deferred income. That's income that we actually been invoiced but we can't let recognize because we haven't incurred the costs. That actually went up by 25% to 209 million. So the balance sheet, I think, remains strong. And as we have mentioned, we have an increase of 47% in our baseline allocation from government to 416 million rand for 2013-14. That's a new financial year. So I think the finances of the organization will remain strong in the next year. The next slide just breaks down the where the income is actually coming from. 212-13, our total income was 530 million. That was down by 5.7% on the prior year. As I mentioned, mainly as a result of the income from grants, which was down to 254 million from 300 million in the prior year. That will, however, increase again with the mentions, what the President has mentioned with the funds from Gates, etc., in the new financial year. Rental income, which is mainly the income we get on leased premises in the Delft area, that has increased from by 4% to 2.9 million. In fact, all the other areas of income have grown. Other income up by 23%, interest on investments up by 9.9%, and then the government subsidies, which is our baseline funding, up by 4.7% to 249 million, giving us the total of 530 million. So in summary, I think a relatively strong financial position. Thank you, and I'll hand back to the President to conclude.
Thank you very much. So
just a quick reminder, if you look at the previous slide, I want you to just to look at the first and last lines. So they give you the comparison of what the MRC are operating. So if you look at 2012-13, the government grant that we received was 249 million. And the funding we received from outside agencies, largely US government, is 254 million. So even the MRC itself receives more funding from the U.S. government than we do from our own. I want to conclude with the last slide by just again pointing out that there is little doubt that South Africa as a whole and the MRC as an organization has made major research contributions over the last years. You know, up to the point where I mentioned in our previous appearance here that we even featured in the State President's State of the Nation address where he congratulated the MRC. We received a clean audit, and we've revised our strategic plan to realign the organization, and we have new strategic goals and targets. Those have been submitted to the Department of Health. We're now waiting for their approval before we implement our new strategic plan and our new annual performance plan. We are very focused on raising the standards to ensure that we are world class, that we are doing the research that ensures that we do research that is that would match what we would expect from any top-class scientist. We're also focusing on the impact of that research. We want to produce new evidence and new scientific findings that impact on health. The revitalization of the MRC is almost complete. We've increased our funding, as you saw, very substantially for new drug development, vaccines, diagnostics. We've reorganized the intramural program. We've rejuvenated health research in the universities. We've more than tripled money available to universities for them to be able to spend on rebuilding research. We've got to make sure that they have enough money to remain competitive in an increasingly competitive world environment. We continue our fundraising. As I said, we were short of about $100 million per annum to double our budget. That's now gone down. We are now $86 million short only. We have approached the Department of Health for $40 million. And they are looking to see what they can do to assist. But we continue our efforts on philanthropy to try and raise more money. Overall, I think it's very important that I end off on the note that we see our role in our society as centrally to provide new knowledge. And that new knowledge is there specifically to improve the health of the nation. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Steve. Members, that is the report. Thank you very much for that report. And even Nick, thank you very much. What happened to your car, Nick? There's a car that's named after you, but it disappeared into thin air. Okay. You know, Slim with the team, when there were upheavals in South Africa, it was that there were people that were underserviced and underdone, and there were those who were regarded as better than the others. That's why people took up arms and fought against that evil. And every particular department was affected. And as we are now, we still have those where you find that Africans were used as reservoirs for work and left in rural areas where there were no economical things that were happening, and the certain areas were given better resources. You go to education, you go everywhere, it's the same. And we continue having that big divide between the poor and the rich. And it's actually, you can see it's on, it has got to do with where you come from rural areas where there were reservoirs, and even the provinces that were reservoirs are still like that. Now the question that I want to pose to you, how much is MRC trying not to do something but to help the present government to transform that situation? How much are they doing to transform that situation? Because if you look, I'm sure you'll agree with me, if you look at the health indicators, if you want to look at infant mortality, it's more in Eastern Cape, Limpopo, and part of KZN, as compared to Gauteng. If it happens in Gauteng and Western Cape, it's in the peri-urban areas. How much have we mitigated? I know part of the problem is not only health. It has got to do that there are no industries in those areas that make me stay there. So I go somewhere. And in fact, I think this sort of impacts on your big hospitals like your Groteskier, because I'll move from Eastern Cape because I think that I'll get better doctors in Groteskier, and I'll build a shack here and give an address of Western Cape because I want to get better healthcare services, because that's what I believe, there are better healthcare services. Now, how much is MRC helping us to re-transform the health services? I know there's good work. There's no doubt about it that there's good work. But how much is MRC helping that political policy of say, let's transform the health services such that they help everybody? I'm just posing it because the key thing is that we need to restructure it such that even if I'm staying in Qingqo, I must feel comfortable that even if something happens to me, there's good healthcare services there. I don't have to go to Chris Anipara. Or if I go there, I must be referred properly and I know that I'm not going to die on the way. Even if I've got a heart attack, I'll reach Gauteng and I'll get what I need to get. So it's just one question, because that was the reason why people fought for equality. It was to make sure that everybody, wherever, if you decide to be in rural areas, you must feel secured that something would happen. How much is MRC helping on that? I think the others were going to continue talking to each other. That's why I was mentioning the BRR, which is the Budget Review and Recommendations Committee. That is something that we want to make sure that we recommend about your budget, because you are doing good work. And if something is good, let's make sure that we support it. But in supporting it, we must make sure that it helps us to make policies. Now, if somebody else is helping you, you'll tend to be closer to that person who's helping. It's natural, it's normal, and we can't blame you for that. But we should take it up upon ourselves that we must make sure that we compete with whoever is doing better. We compete with those ones, rand by rand or whatever you call it. And we're not going to stop trying to make sure that happens. And we're not going to stop them from giving you money, because we want them to give you money, because we want you to work hard. But at the same time, we want to make sure that you respect us too, and you give us the information. Members, that is the report. That's a very good report. They've got an unqualified audit report. We've heard not from them. They were just repeating something that we've already heard. And fortunately, you've been given powers that if there's certain things that you want to reconsider as far as their finances, you can make suggestions, as long as they're not going to change the policy of the department. But you can make suggestions that in this area, I think let's take these finances to where they're supposed to belong. Thank you very much, and we're very happy that South Africa is on the map. That is it, members. I'm looking for a head. I see that Dekhanara is the only male in the committee, by the way. So usually it's the first one to start. You can do a research, you'll find that he's the only male. You can do this. So we're going to start with you, Ndade Harare, and come this side and get that, go the other side and go to the back.
Thanks. I'm the only man, including yourself. I still remain the one. Even if you're included, I still remain the only man in the committee. I think you raised the issue of funding. What I'm interested in MRC is to say, if the United States stops giving us money, have you thought about the implications and what needs to be done? Particularly because we are all worried about PEPFAR and them going to stop funding the projects in South Africa. So we have got to be able to say, as a country, we are relying on these people to do the following, but if they stop, we are going to be affected in this way, but we will try to do the following to be able to do that. And whether the pharmaceutical companies operating in South Africa, what is their role in promoting medical research, and whether they have been approached to say, you are going to benefit for when we get something, what is your role in ensuring that research is ongoing? And the You mentioned a lot of articles and research which has been done. Maybe I've missed it, but there's not much you said about research relating to Millennium Development Goals, which are more focused in ensuring that we meet what we have got to meet. And the under the Auditor General highlighted one thing about under your supply chain management about the staff which was awarded, I don't know whether it was a tender or was business, but without with an expired tax clearance. And he then says it's because there is no adequate, there is inadequate monitoring and review. I'm more interested not about this particular person, but about whether the systems have now been put in place to ensure that this does not repeat itself. Okay, thanks.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thanks for the presentation. And congratulations on the clean audit. It's really, like, encouraging. I've got only one question to be saying that much has been said by National Health Insurance. I would like to know what's your role in terms of research output collaboration. Thanks.
You're very short.
Yeah.
Oh, Honorable Robinson, you didn't have your hand up.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Honorable Robinson. Okay.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thanks for the report, and thanks for the work that you do, and for the information that you give to us for the country to know. I would like to know if you do have partners that you work with in Africa around various issues that affect Africa as well. I'm from rural KwaZulu-Natal, from which people always say, we only see MRC to use us as guinea pigs. But there are no offices of MRC around. Where are the offices of the MRC? So do you have any one office in a rural area, in any province? Thank you very much.
Thank you. I wanted to comment about CEO Sophocus and Transcar.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thank you for the presentation. And once again, congratulations for your clean audit for this financial year. According to the Auditor General this morning, they clearly see that there is a great improvement in terms of your HR management, though there's still some you still need to do some progress in terms of your addressing your IT control. According to your annual report here on page 41, on the issue of HR plans and goals, you have stated them correctly here. They are fine. I'm happy about them because it shows that in future you still want to strengthen that. But now I would like to find out what are the cost implications, because here you just stated what you want to achieve and the plans. If maybe you can tell us what are the cost implications of you to achieve this, because already funding is a problem as we are speaking right now. And my second question is, apparently the revitalization has had a serious impact to the organization. Now, what I wanted to know, what are you going to do to address these HR challenges which resulted due to the impact of the revitalization? And my other question is, there is a high staff turnover in the lower skill band categories, about 59%. What might be the reason for that? My other question is on the financial review. There is the operating expenditure has declined. So I wanted to find out what are the implications in terms of service delivery based on that. Maybe if you can explain that to us. My last question is about the unauthorized expenditure. Apparently here there is an unauthorized expenditure here. It's in contravention with the supply of chain management legislation. If maybe you can just tell us. Lastly, according to the AG, that issue of Mozambique, it is still coming up. Maybe you can tell us why is it not resolved quickly, or what are the issues now? Thank you.
I'm not sure whether Chris, you had your hand up. You didn't. Okay.
Irrelevant, but it's in my mind. I just wanted to check, why do we get only assistance from America? Why only America? Strings attached, or just in, you know, casual contribution, or
maybe. I think maybe that one, honorable, I'm not standing on their behalf, but what is being said is that it's fundraising. Now, when you fundraise, you go to everybody. The one who gives you, you take it.
Yeah.
But I'm not sure they're going to answer to it. But for me, it falls under fundraising. So you just go out and say, I want money. And those who say, I'll give you, you just say, okay, thank you, I'll take it. At the back, Makanya, did you have your hand up? Omzala, did you have your hand up? Okay.
Thank you, Jebesi. My first question is on page 5, when you talk about this. Or let me start by saying also congrats for the clean audit, but it won't remain a clean audit unless you make it to be a clean audit permanently. Thanks. On page 5, you're talking about the revitalization, and now you talk about the reduction of administration, inefficiency, and bureaucracy. My question is that, is MRC revitalization taking cognizance of challenging health indicators such as mortality reduction towards 2015? And also noting that at page 8, there's a Lancet that says progress towards Millennium Development Goal 4. What, now, my question is that, are you also, as health, you are concerned about 3 goals? 4, 5, and 6. And now when you're talking about this goal 4 alone, what about the other 5 and 6 goals, which to my understanding, if we were saying we are approaching 2015. So, but I don't hear you talking about the 5 and 6. You are only concerned about infant mortality, which is 4. Then also, your policies, you talk about your policies being reduced from 93 to 25. And at the same time, on page, you say that you have got a policy, again, where is this page, man? You have got a new policy that you have, is that policy also falls under those 25 that you now have, having reduced them from that 93? And then what role does MRC play in NHI pilot? Because I don't hear you talking about the pilot in terms of research output. As we also approach the NHI implementation. Thank you, Chairperson.
Sarah, you didn't have your hand up. You don't have to have it.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you for the presentation. And we have to congratulate you for the good audit report. My question is, what and how did you manage to reduce the policies for MRC from 93 to 25? That is the only question I have. Thank you.
Okay, Pat, you want to come again?
My last question, Chair. According to the annual report on page 37 here, Chair, under fraud and and corruption prevention strategy. Apparently, the department, they used to have a Vuvuzela hotline, but apparently that was where the employees could just phone anonymously to report any fraud. But unfortunately, that contract was not renewed because it was evident enough that the system was not used. But my question was it not used because there's no corruption or just people who didn't use it? Thank you.
Thank you. I think the biggest congratulation in addition to this one is that you're one of those entities that are saying the key work that we're doing is this, and the administration is there to assist us to get there, and the bigger budget must go to the actual work, which is something that we have found in the Department of Health, that there's more administrators than the health workers. The health workers are limited, but there's a bloated administrative work which negates what they want to do. I think we are congratulating you for that, and in fact we need to learn from that. The second one, but which is probably a question, is you are very key in the department that we're oversighting, that we're giving money to. You are key in helping that department to make policies. But when you look at their strategic plans, they seem not to be congruent with what we are doing. We congratulate you with coming up with a vaccine of this nature, with this one, or telling us that there's so many kids that are dying in such and such an area. But the strategic plans of the department seem not to be working in tandem with what we give them. And in fact, the impression, my simple mind tells me that you make research, you give it to them, they make policies on what you give them. How much is that happening? Because when I look at their strategic plan, it doesn't seem that it fits in well. And I think if you could respond to this question that are coming from members, I think everybody is quite happy with what you are doing, and we want to further congratulate you for the good work that you are doing. Keep it up. The person that I'm worried about is the new HR manager. I see he's starting to become great, but he's going to be, in 2 years' time with the territory, he's going to be more, we expect more gray hairs. But we'll try, you'll be bald, very soon you'll be bald, you'll have to cut your hair so that you don't seem gray. Okay, thank you.
Thank you very much, and thank you to all the committee members. I think, you know, it really heartens me to see the level of detail and the accountability you are holding us to. Indeed, I believe that it's our responsibility to ensure that we respond and are held up to this level of accountability. So I want to answer your question. I'm going to try and do so quickly. So if I don't give you complete answers, I'm happy to come back if you want to revisit them. So I have a total of 14 questions, and I'm going to try and go through them very quickly. So the first question was, so what happens if the U.S. government stops our funding? Pretty much will be the collapse of medical science in this country. I think that's the short answer to it. Fortunately, the way things work in the U.S. or globally in medical research right now, I serve on an organization called HEROES, which is the heads of all government and non-philanthropic medical research organizations. So we all of us, the Australian Medical and Health Research, the UK MRC, the British NIH, the Gates Foundation, the Wellcome Trust, French, Canadian, all of us, we sit together and we share twice a year all our challenges. And I can tell you, when you sit around the table, you realize how unipolar the world is in medical research. The US NIH is such a massive bear in this room because they spend, just through the NIH, their spend is over $20 billion. I mean, just think about it, $20 billion. You know, so that's, you know, 200 billion rands. That's more than our country's entire health budget. Now, you compare that to the rest of the world, all of us, the rest of us, we can't match that. So one country spends more than the rest of us can. That's just, this is not a fair world. When you sit around that table, you realize how unfair the world is. And I have to say, all I remain pleased with is that they do spend the money in this way. I'd much rather they spend it on health research than on military or other reasons. If you look at the PEPFAR funds, there's a steady decline, as was agreed with our government, in PEPFAR funding. And it is anticipated within the next 2.5 years, there will be almost zero PEPFAR funding available. This has impacted on medical research substantially, but fortunately has not had as massive an impact as NGOs have experienced. So, you know, entire hospitals, like McCourt's Hospital, is having to close because of PEPFAR funding stops. When PEPFAR funding stops, your entire organization. I can tell you my own research center, I get about $5 million a year from PEPFAR, which I don't have anymore. So we are having to retrench about 10% of our staff complement. And all organizations are having to do that. So we're going through a trimming process. Fortunately, the bulk of medical research funds don't come from PEPFAR. They come from the US NIH and the US CDC. So those two organizations are not impacted by PEPFAR, whereas PEPFAR is more on the service side. So those who actually treat patients with AIDS, they have been impacted, not to the same extent as research. Your second question that was raised was about South African pharma. One of my greatest disappointments when we went to the National Summit on technology and research, which was hosted by Minister Hanekom and Deputy Minister Mashuta, where the captains of industry were there, the head of Aspen was there, the head of Nestle, we had Dimension Data, all of the CEOs were at this 2-day summit. And we sat and listened to the health sector, and I tell you, you would cringe when you listen to them. Essentially, the pharmaceutical sector in this country are parasites. And I'm not scared to say so. I would say it directly to them. They invest very little, if any, meaningful money in health research. They provide the MRC with zero. And as far as I've been able to establish, based on the information they gave us at the summit, they also invest zero. They do not do research. They simply copy the drugs being made by other companies. They do not develop their own drugs. So the entire pharmaceutical industry in this company is based on manufacturing of drugs developed by international pharmaceutical companies. And simply they are just local manufacturers for them. So this is for me a very sad occasion that I have to make a comment like this, that we really do not have sufficient local pharmaceutical industry investing in science and research. The third question you asked me was about the MDGs and our research to support the MDGs. The entire Lancet series that we published, the 6 papers in 2009 and the paper we published last year, is all focused about how is our country doing in terms of progressing towards the MDGs. And we focused again in our paper on 4, 5, and 6. And if we look at them, although we actually cover all the MDGs, the health MDGs, as you might recall, in 2009, we sounded a very severe warning that we were going in the wrong direction on at least 2 of those MDGs. I'm very pleased to say that we are now going in the right direction on all 3 of our MDGs. The only indicator we are not going in the right direction on right now is maternal mortality. And we don't understand why. But we have put a huge amount of emphasis and effort now into trying to understand why. Why is it we're not able to impact more on maternal mortality? Because that indicator remains a flat line, and every mother who dies is an indictment on all of us. So if you look at infant mortality, HIV incidence, TB, all of those, we are doing well. We will probably not achieve the MDG goal, but at least we would have made progress towards the goal, which is better than going in the wrong direction. In 2009, we were going in the wrong direction. We were going worse. So let me go to your question four. How does the MRC address inequities? We address inequities in various ways. So one of the most substantial ways we do that is by what do we invest in? That's how you should measure us. So we have chosen to invest our money in the top 10 causes of death. Those top 10 causes of death are essentially the diseases of poverty, the diseases of the rural poor. So if you look at the issues, the huge amount of effort we put on drug-resistant TB, the biggest challenges we experience with drug-resistant TB are in the rural areas. The biggest challenges we've been focusing on in terms of pneumonia in children is in the rural areas. So our work has heavily focused on addressing the needs of those who are most in need, the poorest of the poor, and the health profile that they have. So that's where we have, in our revitalization, we shifted the goal. We moved the organization to focus on the top 10 causes of death. We have several other strategies, but I won't bore you in detail, but for example, we have huge programs to address the historical inequities in race and gender in terms of our student population. We have got to, and we have, we can, we've seen this as our primary goal, and it's reflected in the way in which provide our funding for masters, doctoral, and postdoctoral students, that we have to make our contribution to rectifying the past inequities. But we do so also with institutions. So, for example, we have a new RFA going out, which will provide substantial funding to historically disadvantaged institutions, with grants that are not available to the UCTs and Wits universities of the world, but rather to the Walter Sisulu universities, the University of Limpopo, Madunsa campus, and so on, University of Venda. We want to provide those universities with opportunities to improve their research and give them opportunities, to provide them not just with grant money, but with infrastructure money, money that can help them establish systems to support scientists. How to write a grant, how to write a budget for a grant. Elementary things that don't, that you and I would take for granted when we sit at UKZN or at UCT. So we have huge programs in place that address those inequities. In terms of partners in Africa, we have, at this point, we have relationships with about four, substantial relationships with four other countries' medical research organizations. Our strongest links are with Kenya. There's a historical reason for that. We also have a lot of collaborative studies that we undertake, for example, with Ghana. We have several studies we're undertaking jointly with Zambia, with Malawi, Mozambique. And if you take much of our malaria research, for example, is done jointly with Zimbabwe and Mozambique, because we don't have much malaria in South Africa. So we have very substantial links. I think the piece that concerns me is we need to change the nature of these relationships. And that I think ultimately, if we are going to really support and really develop partnerships in Africa, we're going to have to fund them, because we can't depend on their governments funding them. Just like the way the U.S. government funds the whole world to do medical research, we're going to have to play some role. And right now, we don't do that. Right now, we do not make South African MRC money available to researchers in these countries. We rather apply jointly to the U.S. or to the EU for that kind of money. And that's something we are thinking about in the MRC, but have not made any firm decisions. I want to go to the issues relating to the NHI and what is the MRC's role. So we monitor through a range of different mechanisms the burden of disease, including the burden of disease in the pilot 10 districts. We have put a proposal through to the Minister of Health. I've met with him twice on this issue already. We have proposed the creation of a National Health Insurance Research Unit at the MRC. We do not believe such a unit can be created unilaterally by us. If we did that, then it would be isolated. That unit, if we create it, has to be a joint Department of Health MRC unit, so that we work with the people on the ground in the 10 pilot districts in monitoring progress. That has not happened yet. It is in our revitalization report. It is already approved by our board, but we have not yet had the go-ahead from the Department of Health to proceed. As soon as we get that go-ahead, we will create that unit, and we will then engage directly with the 10 pilot districts. Right now, we do so in a piecemeal manner. So we are working, for example, with one of the pilot districts in KwaZulu-Natal, measuring a whole lot of indicators. But it's a once-off, it's a what I call a piecemeal approach, which is not ideal. So what we would like to do is to have a situation where we create an information base to support the Department of Health across all 10 pilot districts. I want to go on to the issues relating to policies and how we reduced it to 25, but in the interest of my vocal cords, I'm going to give Nick a chance to answer some of the financial questions first.
Thank you. I'll attempt to deal with some of the financial and governance related questions. The first issue on the tax clearance certificates. we've implemented now an automated supply chain system. We have some well over 2,500 suppliers on that system. So you can imagine trying to keep track of all of these suppliers and tax clearance certificates is quite a challenge. And I think the AG correctly raised that one or two did slip through the cracks there. What we have done, though, is we've automated. The system is now automated. So what it does is actually flags those suppliers within 3 months of their tax certificates becoming expiring. It flags it so we can then be proactive and go to these suppliers and say, if you want to continue doing business with the MRC, we need a new tax clearance certificate. So hopefully by the time that happens, by the time the new year kicks in, we have a tax clearance certificate. So we are hopeful that that will resolve the remaining one or two that did slip through the cracks. The issue on the operating expenditure, the decline in operating expenditure, will it impact service delivery? The decline in operating expenditure is on our grant funding. So what happens is either the project has come to an end, which means no more money is given from the funder, which means no more costs will be incurred. So to the extent that we don't receive funds, we don't incur costs. Either the project is finished, and most of our funding tends to be short-term, so most of the staff are appointed on a contract basis, so when the funds terminate, so do those particular contracts. So we manage that. So the service delivery that's driven through our baseline funding is not impacted at all. The question on the irregular expenditure, there were some questions on that. The irregular expenditure, and I hope I'm answering the question. Please interrupt me if I'm not. The irregular expenditure in the financial statements has actually declined from 58.59 million to 2.8 million in the new financial year. This is expenditure that's been detected by ourselves. So we actually have a process in place that actually identifies it. We don't wait for the AG to pick it up. We actually pick it up ourselves. We go through a process. We look through our supply chain processes. We look through our creditor payments processes. We actually identify it and say, yes, it is irregular. We take it to the board. We get it condoned. The board is insistent that we actually go back to those individuals who are responsible to say, look, this is, you have breached our policies. Please make sure you don't do it again. And we put additional controls in place. So it has come down. Any irregular expenditure is too much. But it has declined from 2.8. Most of that was as a result of 1.7 million, which is on a laboratory company that was actually specified by one of our funders. But even though it's splitable by our funders, we still need to go through a process, a tendering process. So we still, in some areas, are having to educate some of our units in that particular area. The other issue I think I can respond to is the use of the anonymous system, and why we weren't getting any calls. Well, we didn't get any calls. It's probably too optimistic to say that there's no fraudulent activity. We like to believe that there isn't. All the irregular expenditure, we couldn't identify any fraudulent intention in terms of why we've incurred it. But what we have done is we've actually introduced a new system. And because it was costing so much to keep in place, we've actually introduced a new system whereby on the website, on our intranet, we have an anonymous web page where people can go in. If they believe there's anything untoward, they can anonymously report it, and those things go straight through to the chair, to the president, and the chairperson of the audit committee. So there's anonymity there, but it does go through, and those are addressed. And I don't think, to my knowledge, we've had anything coming through from that avenue either. So I think we're in reasonable shape in terms of fraud. I think that covers all the financial questions.
I'll just continue, if that's okay with you, Chair.
No, your vocal cords are
busy. Yes, yes. Very, take up the challenge. So I just want to make the point that we haven't found fraudulent expenditure, fortunately. We have found irregular, but haven't found fraud involved. And I have no doubt in this country, in this day and age, there's probably fraud. We just haven't been able to find it. But this new system, I feel, is a lot better. So this new system allows you to go into the website, enter all the information you want, and then automatically goes to myself and the chair of ERIC, and we can then deal with it in that way. I'm hoping that we will continue to encourage people to continue reporting. But one of the issues that Nick has raised, which causes me great strain, is that the Audit and Risk Committee insists that I meet with each staff member personally to deal with them on the issue of irregular expenditure. So I have them queuing up at my office, a bit like the principal's office. They have to come and see me because they had irregular expenditure. And my job is to scold them and to tell them, if it happens again, you'll have to deal with me. This time it won't be such a pleasant conversation. It shall be a much more severe one. So nobody has come twice to my office so far. So coming once, I think, is enough to scare them. I want to go on with your questions, and then I'm going to ask Mulelo to answer your HR questions. So your question was, how did we reduce policies from 93 to 25? What happened over the years? The policies grew incrementally. So we had a policy that dealt with, for example, S&T. We now had to deal with a new aspect to it, so we created a new policy. So what happened, we had this, we didn't sit back and say, okay, we can rationalize it. Every time we had a new problem, we created a new policy. So it grew and grew and grew. So when we reflected on it, we realized that much of what we had actually needs to be coherent with each other. Because we're finding now we had so many policies that sometimes we can't pick up if one conflicts with the other. So we consolidated them. And we made them genuine policies, not operating procedure. So we separated the two out. So we have a series of operating procedures that allow us to proceduralize the policy, but we keep the policy at the policy level. So we looked at best practice. We looked at several other organizations. We also asked KPMG for their advice. And we looked at, and I have to tell you, our audit committee chair, her opinion was that we should have one policy. I mean, we could never get to one policy, but we managed to then cone it down to four different areas. So we had finance, HR, and so on. So in those areas, we consolidated, reduced it, and have a much more coherent set of policies. In fact, you read our policies, they're all readable now. Previously, I don't even think people read the 93 policies. I can tell you it's somewhat painful because it needs a group of people to actually go through everything and throw out things and then consolidate. And fortunately, we had a team that just did this. It was a huge amount of work. Our big issue, of course, is HR policies, because those, we've revamped them. They've been through extensive consultation processes at leadership level. We have now just finished the roadshows. Mbulelo has been to each of our offices where we've discussed our new HR policies with the staff. The last step now is to have the discussions with the union. At the end of that, we then take it to the board. So it's a slow and very tedious process to revise policies. My last comments I want to touch on. Actually, I'll touch on it in a minute. Let me give Mbulelo a chance to talk about HR, and then I'll talk about the issue of how did we deal with the admin issues and the relationship between DOH policies and MRC findings.
Thank you, Slim. The question was around financial implications on the future HR plans and goals. Now, if you look at the plans and goals for the future, probably there's one that would have financial implications. But because that one is a futuristic one, at this stage we can't cost it, because it's the alignment of the remuneration with market-related salaries. So it's a process that we're still working on in terms of understanding exactly what is being paid in certain areas and what are we paying, because in the past the MRC has been paying very poorly and we've lost people. In fact, we have not been paying even the 25th percentile. We are catching up now to pay people at the 25th percentile.
So I should just briefly explain what is meant by the 25th centile. So each year we have a company called REM Channel, actually several companies. We use one of them in particular. What they do is they survey our sector. So they look at all the companies in our sector, private, public, and our sector it's mainly universities, the other science councils, and so on. And then they look at the salary ranges for each individual categories of jobs. Then they give us a range. And the range, within that range is a median, or the 50th centile. The 50th centile means at this salary level, so let me give you an example. A laboratory technician who has 3 years of experience. A laboratory technician, the median salary, the 50th centile salary, maybe say 200,000 rands a year. What that means is that 50% of the companies pay less than that, and 50% of the companies pay more than that. So if you gave somebody that salary, you are roughly in the middle. If you gave people a salary on the 25th centile, which may be, say, 160,000 rands, now 75% of the companies are paying more than you for this job. 25% of the companies are paying less than you. So that's what we are targeting. Right now, the MRC has targeted the 10th centile. So we pay our staff. Now, it should say it's the minimum. The minimum we will pay our staff is the 10th centile. So there are several staff that are not paid, they are paid at the 100th centile or 90th centile. But they are, the minimum that we were willing to pay is the 10th centile. So we've raised that, and that affects quite a lot of our staff, right? Something of the order of around 40 to 50% of our staff. We've raised that to the 25th centile. That means that for about half of our staff, we're paying them at a level at which 75% of the companies in our sector will pay better than us. So our goal eventually is to get to 50. That's where we should be. We should be in the middle. So we're not paying them, you know, we're not one of the top paying companies, but we're not one of the low paying companies. So that's our goal. So I hope that better explains what we mean when we try to target these different centers. So I want to end off then with just addressing the remaining issues. So the issue around the Mozambique matter, it is the, you know, it's the one fraud activity we have in our books. So that's the only fraudulent thing we've got. So that's why the AG keeps, you know, dealing with it. So the crooks were caught, and the court case is ongoing in Mozambique. So that's why it remains an ongoing issue. It's not a closed issue. But they were, we've not uncovered any new fraud. Remember, this goes back 2 years when the fraud, when the money we gave to the Mozambicans, it was found that they stole the money and they fraudulently used it. So there's nothing new in the Mozambican issue, except the AG just wants us to continually update them on what's the situation, particularly if we're going to recover any of that money. But we can't recover the money until the court case is over. The issue about the admin, the board made a decision that we should spend no more than 20% of our budget on administration. That's a board decision. Right now, we are spending 27% of our budget on administration. When I started, we were spending 38% of our budget on administration. So we've certainly made some dent on that. We are on track, I would say, within the current MTEF to get to 20% of our budget on administration. So that way, we would, and administration is not always easy to cut, Mr. Chairman. We have huge grounds to look after, huge buildings, so it just you know, paying the gardeners, the guards at the gate, and all of that, that's all administration cost. Mm-hmm. And, you know, our IT needs are very substantial, so just the IT department, the legal services department, all of those, and as you know, SEM is a huge issue for us, so we have, all those departments consume a lot of resources. But our goal is still to reach the board decision of 20% of our budget on administration within the current MTEF. And then finally, so we have various mechanisms of our interaction with the Department of Health. The Department of Health makes its decisions on policies independent of the MRC, obviously, because they have their own pressures to do that. But where we have produced evidence and have taken it to the Department of Health, we have found only a very supportive environment. Let me give you one clear-cut case. It actually draws on the chairman's comment right at the beginning about his whiskey drink, which I know not to be true. So the information that the minister used in his efforts to address the issue of alcohol advertising comes directly from the MRC. The research that was done, the evidence we provided, the calculations we did on the amount of money being spent on the advertising versus the amount of money we spend on the road accidents and all the other health problems caused by alcohol, we showed quite conclusively that advertising should be curtailed. We looked at other countries and what the impact of curtailing advertising was on alcohol consumption. All of that research done by us. If you look at the minister's pronouncements around the provision of condoms in schools, despite the Minister of Education's opinions otherwise, all of that evidence was provided by us. We did the background evidence collection, the review of all of the existing data. The issue of salt and the minister's policies on reducing salt and controlling, regulating salt content of foods, particularly things like chips, all research we've done. So there's no question, we are behind the scenes. You don't see us. But when a minister stands up and talks about salt, he's telling you what we put in our evidence to him. Thank you.
Thank you, Prof. Slim. Thank you very much. They say in our area that it's the wife, it's very sexist. They say if you see a good man, you must know there's somebody who's really pushing, who's doing all the dirty work to make him to be like that. You mustn't praise him, you must praise the wife who's not there. So no, we're praising you, and I think this is very good. Maybe, you know, when you sit as parliamentarians, all we do here, we get a little bit left, right, and center. A lot of people come to us and say, no, when you make this law, you mustn't do it this way. They mustn't lobby us. We are going to send them to you. When they come with smoking alcohol, we say go to Slim, talk to Slim, so that when he does the research, you must make it such that the alcohol is not going to be, you're not going to stop advertising it. So thank you very much. I'm not sure, members, whether you've got anything, but before I come to you, I would like to hear the comment of the department. Welcome, Anba. We knew that you were delayed. It's as if you are coming from Eastern Cape, from Umtata, where there are no planes. But we know it sometimes happens. You know, on Tuesday, I got into a plane at 11 o'clock, which was going to leave Joburg at 11 o'clock for Cape Town at 1 o'clock. But we only left Joburg. We're sitting in the plane. We left Joburg at 12:45. Then we arrived at about 2:45. So even in Joburg, it happens like Transkei. So we accept your being late. So maybe let me ask the department just to have a comment. And then it will be the chair, and then we'll close if there's nothing from the member. Chair of the board. Maybe Unobayen is the leader.
I'll take one part and Anban will take the other. Honorable members and the honorable chairperson delegation of MLC, thank you very much. As a department, I think we value the close working collaboration with MLC. And indeed, as the president of the MLC has indicated, when it comes to information, I mean, we meet on a regular basis through the deputy minister, and we actually do get updates, and we actually factor those. I think sometimes it's not well pronounced, but it actually does influence the way we actually operate and the way we use data. In terms of life expectancy, I think those results, I think we pronounce on those boldly through the minister and also through the statements that were actually made by the MLC soon after the study was actually released. As in everything, I think we need to continuously improve on certain things and actually learn from each other. I think the issue on the budget, I mean, was raised last year. It will continue to be on the table. As the president of the MLC indicated, budgets overall in government have been in control, and as a result, that issue will remain on the table and we'll continue to actually consider it over time. And we hear the MLC in terms of where they are coming from. And when you look at, I mean, budget allocations to the U.S., I think it's a long history over many years. And I think the president of the MLC articulated that very well. There is no country so far that actually competes to what the MLC can the U.S. government can actually put on the table in terms of funding research. But it is a model that we all can learn from in terms of commitment towards health research and the impact that it actually has globally. Anban can, I think, add on to other things in terms of governance. Anban and myself actually share the responsibility over MLC. I look at the research aspect. He has oversight over governance issues. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Anban, I heard you on SAFM talking about medical aid. I didn't know that you know about MRC, but talk about MRC.
Thank you, Chair. And thank you, honorable members. I think our assessment of the operations of the MRC from a governance perspective is there's been significant improvement from where the council was previously. Certainly, you know, we attend the board meetings and have a good sense of what's happening within the council. I think the most difficult time of the council has been around, you know, right-sizing the MRC in relation to its budget and trying to make some decisions about priorities around research and linking that to the funding that's available. So I think those were some hard decisions. I think the council's out of that period now. And I think that moving forward we'll probably see significant improvements around research out of the council. Around the finances, that remains a concern for us, not in terms of the management of the finances, but I think in order for the MRC to be able to produce the outputs that it needs a lot more funding, and I think the members highlighted the fact that, you know, a lot of funding comes from the donor sources, and I think we need to find some innovative ways of improving the financing of research in a more sustainable manner rather than the way it's currently being done. So I'll stop there, Chair. Thanks.
Thank you very much, Anva. Members, let me ask the Chair first if there are any questions, members. Let me allow the Chair to have a final word.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair, Honorable Members of the Portfolio Committee and colleagues from MRC. I hope I don't take too long. I'm a bit emotional about this day. This is the end of the term of this board, and we've come a long way. And I'm certain that I'll use the expression, apart from myself, and the other members from the support. I'm the only member from the executive who started with you at the beginning of our three-year term. So the MRC, in terms of its leadership and governance, has come around a long way. There's, I think, a palpable difference or improvement, let me say, in the interaction that we've had over the last 3 years. I'll first just comment very quickly, a small point on all the things, not everything that has been asked, but my sort of personal take on these matters. The issue of, in South Africa, the burden of disease research is extremely important, because most of the burden of disease, you have heard, is related to issues of poverty and other social determinants of health, okay, all political, economic, or geographical. And I think, apart from pointing out numbers, which are useful at the beginning, we need to dig deeper, obviously, into some of the causes, and therefore what preventative measures can be taken. As soon as you get to that point, it no longer becomes an issue just for the MRC. It becomes a multi-agency response, for example, in issues of public health and issues of service delivery. So it's a determination of how we interact with the other agencies who participate in the health issue. I think the example that has been given in the non-communicable diseases and lifestyle are the issues that have been raised about tobacco, alcohol, salt, and exercise, and many other things. Because I think to really get a healthy nation, we really need to concentrate on non-communicable diseases for the future. At the moment, we've been grabbed by HIV and AIDS and cancer and many other things. And that list of 10 causes of death, I think, are significant to look at every time to review what's going on. Because as issues in the next 5 years, maybe we're going to have less mortality from AIDS, again, from research and better delivery of services, we're going to have another emerging epidemic. So it's a constantly evolving matter when you deal with research. Second one is just to comment about the role of the pharmaceuticals. The President referred to the summit that was called by Minister Derek Hanekom, and in fact it was very disappointing. The word, we talked about research and development. They actually changed it and said they don't talk about research and development, they talk about investment and development. And when they've got money and they want to do any research or investment, they will go to a country which is going to give them the best yield financially. It was really quite upsetting. But maybe we need to engage a little bit more with them for the future. But it looks at, and the policies are not determined in South Africa, as the president said. It's determined by the parent company, which is a multinational company sitting somewhere in Germany or Switzerland or what have you. As far as the NHI is concerned, you already have some information, but the issue that comes up is there are many role players in this NHI. We've already set up a prospective unit. We want to make sure that we get into the right niche. And, I mean, there are issues about the economics and all the philosophies about NHI, and we really want to get our niche into the true research, into what are the things that the Department of Health wants us to research. And of course, if we're going to do that, we're willing to do it. I must add that this is going to be new money, because this is a new unit, it needs to be funded. And when we come to that point, I hope the chairperson will put that forward, that we can't use the existing resources to fund new research in that particular area. About presence in the sort of rural areas, maybe it's not so easy, but let me quote one university, WSU, where esophageal unit was established some years ago. We have inherited a legacy of policies where research, I think still exists, is built around the principal investigator. When the principal investigator leaves or dies, a serious crisis about that particular project, and maybe again as we reach a term, these are some of the things we've just got to look at. How do we sustain units in the more distant, far flung out areas in sort of more rural areas to sustain and to maintain high degree, because at the moment you probably find that people go as a team, they do research, they come back and forth, come back and forth. But as you have indicated, a presence in this sort of rural areas are important, even just for the image. As you say, we don't want people thinking that we're just using them as guinea pigs in and out. And, yeah. So we need to think a little bit about that. In terms of fundraising, I think I'd like to mention that Slim, the president, has mentioned many times within the board that whenever we raise money, not always, but often when you raise money, the people we're raising money, they say, we're prepared to give you 100 million, but we want your government to put in rent for rent. And that's so Slim. So, again, if we go and raise money, there might be a need for our own government. Government or department to match that kind of fundraising. That at least secures 50% of whatever we're able to raise from outside, and that's the way things are probably going to go for the future. The hotline and fraud, just a light comment. Anonymity is an ideal. We're a very small organization at the MRC, not in numbers but in proximity. And I was told at one time that you can even trace where something comes from, which phone, which computer, what have you. So I don't know if people are afraid that their anonymity may not be as anonymous as they think they are. But we probably need to tighten that if we need to work on it. And lastly, from the questions, is that we have, of course, a National Health Research Committee, which advises the minister on health research issues, and we would be looking at probably a better cooperation between MRC, the Department of Health, and the National Health Research Committee, which is headed by Professor Bongani Mayosi, in terms of identifying what are the critical or priorities in research. But we believe what we've put out at the moment is based on a fair assessment of the burden of disease or issues in the country. And I just wanted to make those general comments and say, from the perspective of where we've been and where we are at, publicly, I'd like to thank the members of the team, the EMC, the support staff, for the hard work they've put in turning, I use the word, to turning the MRC around in all aspects, in governance, in financial management, in HR issues. Certain things you may not be aware of, that when we did this revitalization and downsizing, we spent 6 months with the section 189 about the whole issue of how we're going to reduce the number of internal units to where we are now. And at the middle of that, the minister would come and say, you cannot, we don't want to lose jobs. It's a bad thing to lose jobs at the moment. So we've had to do that kind of balancing act, and I'm glad to say the president says there are probably very few people who will actually have to be retrenched, and they've put in a lot of work in ensuring the stability of the organization. Remember, there's change, there's instability, there's always risk, and we're afraid that some people might go. But I think we've managed to retain quite a lot of the researchers within the institution to for sustainability of what we believe is a bright future for the MRC. And I don't think I've got anything new to add to the detail, but to again say for me personally it's been a very rewarding experience interacting with the Health Portfolio Committee over the last 3 years. From head of department in surgery to a dean of a medical school to president of the colleges of medicine to chair of the MRC board, and looking across people who have a greater, bigger constituency, and the accountability has been quite an interesting experience. I'd like to thank you for your interaction in a manner that has been supportive and grown the MRC. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Thank you very much. I don't think there are any more questions, members. We accept your report. We'll take it as is, but there are a few things that BRR tells us. We might have some recommendations, but we'll tell you those recommendations that we're going to be doing. I think you have been so good. Maybe it's your board. We don't know whether it's because there is a honeycomb there. Maybe he gets some information from somewhere in parliament or in the executive. There is something that always bothers us. We always worried about, it's not your baby, but it's about health. We're always worried about the information that we get from our institutions and clinics. It doesn't seem that it is good enough. In fact, the example that was made this morning by Auditor General is that she went into one clinic and the nurse was one in that clinic, and the nurse has got to do the clinical work during the day and at night sit down and look at the information. So maybe the information that we're getting from us is not that, but that is not your baby, that is something else. So thank you very much, members. Thank you very much, MRC. Tomorrow is a mental health day, and there's something happening in Parliament for the first time. I know that Ekhanare is very interested in going to that mental health workshop. So you are all invited. You are all invited, including MRC, the department. You are all invited to be there. I think it's got to be Prof. Who's in psychiatry in the mental health in the department is the one who's going to be talking there. So you're all invited. The meeting is over. So we can go early back home.
I think so. The Friday church, if I say that, let's do for job today. We thought that it's for 180 hours. Let's do the same thing tomorrow. Okay. And say we. It was on Saturday on a Friday. Because there is no Friday. On Saturday, it is a medical thing. Can't we change medical things together with a laboratory tomorrow, initial tomorrow? Why okay, one day, day? If we can do this on the same day, then that's why now I'll do the other one.
The end.